This is Monday, June the 26th, 1995. It's a very hot day. We do need rain. The city of Madison Heights is celebrating our 40th year as a city. Today I'm taping an interview with Bruno Trebnikar. He has lived in this area some 77 years. Okay, Bruno. Bernie, would you like to tell me about when you came out here, you and your family?
Well, we moved into Rutto Township in 1918 with my father and mother and my brothers and sisters at that time. And I was born in Detroit, and I was about 3 years old when we moved into Rutto Township.
Boy, that's great. That's a long time, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
What did your dad do, like, for a living, you know?
Well, at that time, my dad did work for Ford Motor Company. And in 1930-something, in the 30s, there, 31, 32, when the Depression was just coming out of the Depression, he got laid off. And he had about 15 years in with Ford's. Then he started into the cattle business on our farm. On the corner between 11 and 12, there was two farms, our farm and another farm, and that's all there was on the east side or the west side of the Quinter. And we were in the cattle business. And then about 1934, Ford Motor Company sent my dad a telegram or a notice if he would come back to work. My dad made the remark, I can remember at that time, saying, well, Ford didn't need me back a couple, 3 years ago. I don't need Ford today. We got into the big cattle business.
Well, good. Is that the cattle that used to be across 11 Mile Road from the from Madison Heights now? Was it kind of in Warren at that time?
Well, we had, we lived on naturally on this side, on the west side, which was Rutto Township. On the other side, on the east side, was Warren.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was called Warren Township. And we did rent 120 acres of cattle ground, cattle pasture, and we farmed everything on this side, about a half a mile of Rutto Township, which from our home to 11 Mile Road, we had into mostly large grain, like corn and feed for the cattle.
Uh-huh. Gee, that's great. And how many brothers and sisters did you have?
Well, actually, I did have four brothers and two sisters. One died at the age of 1 year or so.
One boy or girl?
One boy, yes. And so there was the three brothers, which I still have the three brothers, but my two sisters have passed away since.
I knew Bernice really well, but what was your other sister's name?
The other sister was Jenny. She was older than Bernice. She was the oldest one. Bernice was second oldest, and I was the oldest of the boys.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize Bernice was that old.
No. So, and today, the Trebnikar family has dwindled down. It was a large, large family between here and out of state, Pennsylvania, Cleveland. And as of now, I wish I didn't have the honor, but I'm the oldest Trebnikar living.
Well, I don't know. That might be a good idea. You'd be the boss for a while anyway, can't you?
Yeah.
All right. Where did you go to school, Bernie?
I went to school, actually, well, what at that time was Madison High School. I graduated from Madison High School in 1934. And then, of course, from there on.
Did your brothers and sisters go there, too?
Yes. All my brothers and sisters, well, all but the oldest one, which was Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
She did not graduate from the Madison High School. But the rest of us did, because Jenny was born in Yugoslavia, in Europe.
Oh.
And she came here when she was 16 years of age. She had a certain amount of schooling, but did not graduate from high school.
Uh-huh. Did she come over when your dad and mother did?
No, no, because she was, like I say, 16 years old. And she was a baby when my dad and mother left Europe.
Oh, I see.
But they had their parents were living, and they said if they would take her away from them, they would shorten their lives. So they left her over there, and then it got to a point where it was a problem getting her over here. Well, eventually, they did get her over when she hardly turned 16, because at that time, I don't know how the laws are today, but if she wasn't here by the age of 16, she could not become automatically a citizen under my dad's citizenship.
Oh.
So they really had to do some fancy work there to get her in here before she was 16, so that she did get that citizenship under my dad. It was one of those laws. I don't know if it's still that way
today
or not.
I don't know either.
No,
I don't know. I know there is a law about it.
But that was the big deal about bringing her over at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And
Bernie, you've been very active in here. Tell us about some of the things you've been into, like, instance, what your work was in. And
okay, like I said, I did graduate in 1934, and things weren't too good at the time. We were just coming out of the Depression, you might say. And I was one of those guys that said I would never work in a factory, you know. Big deal. Some friend of my dad said one day, I want you to come down to my shop. He was kind of a supervisor at the L.A. Young's. And it was not the Spring and Wire. It was a place where we made golf balls, golf clubs, and several skis. So I went down there one morning with him and line up around the building about a block or so, and I thought, well, how am I ever going to get a job here? I never seen the inside of a shop. Well, anyway, I waited a couple hours. They put me to work.
Okay.
So I worked there for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. And then I had a good job there, a real good job. Made good money for those days. But union work was coming in. And the owner of the shop made a statement, if you bring the union in here, I will close the shop up. Well, they didn't believe that. Well, he closed the shop out, and I was offered a job. He moved into Grand Rapids. And at that time, I shouldn't talk like this. I'm a former farm boy, but he says, I can hire these farm boys up here for about half the wages I'm paying you guys. So they're going to cut my wages. Plus, I'll be living away from home. I have to pay board and room out there. So I decided not to go with them. And then I got a job with the Dodge truck people, the Chrysler people. And then I worked there until I got on the police department of Royal Township.
Bernie, weren't you one of the original three?
Yes. when I got on... When I got on there, there was a chief and three patrolmen. We had, at that time, an area, which is this area, which is Madison Heights now, plus an area over on 8 Mile, Wyoming, which was part of Royal Township at that time. So we had, sometime we would get a call at 14 Mile in DeQuinder to 8 Mile in Wyoming, which was a long shot across.
Right.
But that's the way things were. And there was only three men on the department, plus the chief.
Who were the other two? You?
Paul Myatt, Lloyd Chambers, and myself. And then, of course, Chief Smith. He became judge later on in our city. I stayed on there until, well, first of all, I was a patrolman for 8 years, and then the last 3 years, I was a detective. I was the first detective that the police department had at that time. What we did in 1950, we had put on the ballot for civil service, and the people approved it, and we did get civil service in, and that's the first time we had civil service. Before that, all these police men that came on there, police officers, were political appointments, and wasn't too good.
That's right.
So by getting the civil service in, we had protection under civil service laws. And then I was the first one to take an examination under civil service, and that was for the detective. And I did come out top man on that, and then I stayed on there for 3 years as a detective, and finally left the police department in 1954. I was on the police department and also owned Travnicker Trucking and leased landscaping at the time. Well, in 1954, I got into the cocktail lounge business, which was Burnage Cocktails in Madison Heights. And I operated that from 1954 to 1966. In 1966, I sold out, and I got into the Quinter Hardware Sale, Quinter and Sporting Goods Sales on the Quinter. I stayed there for a couple of years. Then I got into the hall business, which is Timberland Hall. It's still in there today. And I was involved in that for a short time. Actually, I owned the building, but I didn't like the business because of the food business. I knew the liquor business. I did not know the food business. So when the came, I made an agreement with a partner I had that if things would go well, I would get out of the business and he would take it over, which he did, and we set a lease deal on it, and he was leasing the building from me from there on in. Well, anyway, in 1969 to 1975, I opened up another cocktail lounge, which was the Red Run Inn, and operated at that for whatever, nine years, I guess. And then I sold that out. And that was all that was the extent of my, actually, business ventures. But in 1975, which I was going to turn 60 in May, I sold out in February because I made my wife a promise that I would not carry a lunchbox or punch a time card when I was 60 years of age. So it was kind of a goal I had set, and I met that goal. She used to remind me of it once in a while, and I thought, well, I'm going to do it. Well, anyhow, in 1975, the Madison National Bank, they wanted me on the board of directors. I told them at earlier dates that I could not handle it because they had all the business I could handle on my own, so I wouldn't accept the appointment or the election to get on the board. Well, when they heard I was getting out of business, they got on me right away, and they had an election in April, and I was elected to the board. Well, my wife said, why are you doing this now? And I said, well, I want to learn the banking business. I said, I'll do it for 1 year. Well, the thing was, I stayed on there for 18 years. And I am still on as a community relations director of the Madison National Bank today. But I'm not a director, in essence, as I was before, making decisions of the operation of the bank. I also served 5 years on the Martin Place Hospital, which is the Oakland General Hospital today in our town. I served on various boards in the township, in the city. I'm a past president of the Metropolitan Club, past president of the Goodfellas, past president of the Bar Owners Association, also past vice president of the Michigan Licensed Beverage Association. I was also a member of the Chamber of Commerce, the Kiwanis Club, and I served on the Civil Service Commission for 21 continuous years. They wouldn't let me off of there because, going back to my knowledge of the civil service, which I was very active in bringing civil service into the area, I knew the act very well and was a pretty good man, I guess, to have on civil service.
Aren't you still in that?
No, I finally gave that up because I had too many other things. I couldn't, like I say, if I couldn't perform and be right there, I wouldn't accept it. So I finally told them I got to get off of there because they had other things pushing pretty hard for me, and I gave it up after 21 years.
You served your term, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Bernie, mm-hmm. Do you remember when DeQuinder was paved, or what did it look like when you first remember it?
Well, DeQuinder was strictly a dirt road, not gravel. They never had gravel on that road. In 1928, they paved it, two-lane paved road. And that's the first time that we could actually say that we could come into our place all time of the year, because there were so many times my dad had to park his car at half a mile away, 11 mile in the corner, because, like you say, it was strictly dirt and no gravel, and it was hard to come to.
Was any other roads around here paved?
Well, 11 Mile Road was paved before the DeQuinder was. John R. was paved. It was strictly two-lane. 11 Mile Road had a bad situation. They had a ditch on one side of it that was so large that people would mistake on nasty nights that they couldn't see. They thought it was another lane of highway, and they'd take the ditch. And I was on the police department at the time, and many of the people would say, well, I thought that was a road, and it was just a water or ice over the ditch.
Were you on the police department the night the lady fell in there and she lost an eye? Do you remember that?
Well, I can't really recall that particular instance because there were so many of them that we had. We had that. That was a bad situation, that ditch. And then, of course, another bad deal we had was the Red Run. That was a big open, so-called, whatever you want to call it, ditch or whatever.
Yeah.
I did, at one time, we got a call there like about 5 o'clock in the morning, and it was really cool morning. And there was a couple standing on the bridge on John R. with the open ditch down below. And the first thing I asked them, their car was in this ditch, and I asked them if they had anybody else with them, and they said no, they didn't have anybody, but they were just practically freezing, you know, and it didn't make much sense. So I called the ambulance and took them to the Royal Oak Hospital, which we didn't have Beaumont at that time. We didn't have Open General. We didn't have Royal Oak. That was a big hospital. Well, I called the wrecker to get this car out of the Red Run drain there. And when they did dump the car up, kids' things seemed to float out of the car, little toys, milk bottles, and whatever. And I got kind of worried about it, and I called the hospital, and I said, will you ask these people if they had anybody else in the car with them? By this time, I guess they came to, and they said, yes, they had a baby in the car. And they don't know what happened to that. Well, it wasn't in the car, so what happened to it? Well, naturally, in the drain. Well, what we did, which people don't believe, we had a drowning in town, which they say, where would you have a drowning in the Madison Heights area? Well, it happened there. We started dragging for this baby with rowboats. We had helicopters flying above, and we went on this all day long. I came home about three different times, changed clothes because of getting wet, and the thing was a mess to work in.
It was like a sewer, wasn't it?
Yes.
Open sewer.
Bad. Well, anyway, we had big hooks we were dragging with, and this started about 6, 7 o'clock in the morning. It went on all day till about probably 5 o'clock the next evening, and everybody in town at that time, we're supposed to find this baby. Nobody else. We got to find them. And I knew we had to do it, so we worked on it. Well, it happened that time that our former chief, which was Joe Sloan, finally did the baby, and it was underneath the cavity of the drain, and the baby was about a year old. So that was a thing that we kind of talked about different times. People couldn't imagine a drowning in Madison Heights.
Now, Bernie, you said Joe Sloan. Did you mean the fire department?
Yes.
He was the chief of the fire department.
He was chief of the fire department.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, they went on it too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm not certain whether he was chief at the time, but he was
chief later anyway.
And retired as a chief of the fire department.
You know, I remember that now that you mentioned it.
Yeah.
I forgot about it.
It was a bad situation. Well, of course, other things, we had so many things. I made this remark to a lot of people. I read articles in the paper today. There isn't a thing that I read in the paper that I have not witnessed.
I bet so.
We've had, in those days, we've had, naturally, we had shootings, we had knifings, we had cuttings. Of course, we had, like I said, we had this area, we had the West Lake Marwood area, and we had, well, people, one time, a guy hung himself from a tree. I had to go out there and cut the rope down, drop him to the ground. Carbon monoxide in garages was common. At one time, I had a car that was in a ditch at 10.5 mile in the Quinder, and that was in the afternoon. And as I stopped and checked it out, there was a young woman in this car, and she was passed out. So I thought, well, I don't know what's wrong. I thought, well, I called for a wrecker, and she finally came to, and I sent her up to the hospital. But again, when the car was brought out of the ditch, the trunk lid flew up. Here she had a hose hooked from the trunk into the back window of the car inside, and of course I knew it was carbon monoxide. So I quick called this gal and asked her a few questions. And well, in the meantime, I found a note in the car. She had said, whatever, give her all her date of birth and date of death. She put that on for that day because well, she was going. Well, it all turned out like this, that after it all was over with, I made a point to meet with her. And I wanted to know, I said, you know, I'm not looking for any big deal here, but I said, I would like to know just what took place. I said, up until this point that you passed out. She said, well, she just drove. Everything was fine. Everything was pleasant. She just slipped away. No problem at all. So I found out then that it was very easy to go by carbon monoxide. It's an easy way to go.
Okay.
Well, anyway, family trouble brought it about. And she was pregnant. She finally had a baby boy and named him after me.
So you got a little Bernie Bernie there.
Right? I thought, well, what else? Of course, people, you know how people...
That's all right. Yeah. but I think that's kind of cute.
But anyway, like I say, then we had, I've had experience like, we had cases of, you might say, suicide and murder at the same time. One case where a husband shot his wife and then shot himself. And, things were hard to take. But at the time, you just had to accept, there was nobody else to do it. The police department had to do it. And we did our job, but you know, it would work on you for 2-3 days after it all settled down, and then you're thinking about what it was all about.
Bernie, do you remember the fire that they had? I think it was over on Farnham at Tucker's. It seems to me like that name comes to me somewhere, some way. Tucker's, did you know any Tuckers that lived over there?
Yeah, well, Dave Tucker was on the fire department.
Okay. Well, it wasn't his house, was it?
I don't remember. I don't think it was. It was right by Tucker's. So
yeah, it was by there, but there was a little baby.
I don't know the particular. I was not on that deal.
Oh,
and,
okay.
But I knew that it happened in that area.
Well,
and Dave Tucker was on the fire department.
Oh, my husband was a volunteer at
that
time.
Yes, right, yeah.
And he brought that little baby that got burnt to death.
Okay.
And do you know something? He couldn't sleep. He couldn't eat. He would throw up. He was just...
Well, this is what I'm saying. As tough as you think police officers are, I don't care how tough you think you are, after a couple of days, particularly if it comes like Bill was saying about the baby,
right.
that really hits you, hits home. It's hard to accept. But we had some real bad deals. And another thing, at that time, you know, we didn't have facilities like they have today. The police department, the fire department were like one. I come closer to death on the police department, on the fire department, than on the police department. Joe Sloan had me by my hand. We were crawling across the floor in a smoked area where they said there was kids in there. We tried to get in there to get the kids out. The only thing saved me when I got out was a fence up in the backyard, and I hung on the fence. I didn't want people to think I was going to pass out, and I was about to pass out because of smoke on me. So, but that was a common thing at those days. We had to assist each other. The departments were small, you know, and the only thing that was good about the whole thing, like if we had a bad, like on the radio, a call, a police call, and if it was of a serious nature, You never saw so many police officers answer that call, because at that time it was common. If Royal Oak heard it, Hazel Park heard it, Warren heard it, they all emerged on the scene.
Everybody helped.
And everybody would say, never thought we had such a large police department. They didn't realize they came from all... We all did, but that was part of our only way we could do it, you know.
You know, Bernie, what you're saying now, that makes me... I just have so much respect for police officers, as I always have. I don't think the parents teach the children enough respect for them.
No.
Because nobody, unless they've been through that, like I was with the fire department with Bill, knows what those guys really go through. It's terrible.
This is true, Lois. These people don't, you know, the papers, they don't get all this stuff. They read what they read in the papers. But you happen to have it firsthand, because
right. You
take the volunteers at that time. Without volunteers, this town would have been in big trouble.
I know.
Because we couldn't afford to put on that many firemen, but we had some very good volunteer people
right.
on there. And without that, it'd have been a bad, bad deal. And another thing, Lois, I'm not critical of it, but today, the equipment, the facilities they have, are much better for protection of these people. Those days, like I say, the policemen and firemen were at a real risk every time they went someplace like that, because they did not have the proper equipment.
Yeah. And it was hard to get to you? There was no phones or anything out here?
No, that's another thing.
It was bad.
It's talking about not getting... Going back to the old days now, I started on we had one car, no radio, no heater. We would have to drive by the police station. If the light was on, we'd go in to see what the call was about. Then we'd go on our call.
No kidding, I didn't know that.
We eventually got a one-way radio, and during the war years, to operate a two-way radio, you had to have a federal communications license, and that was kind of hard to get. One time three of us went down, and I happened to pass it. Well, that's fine. But they were bad on us at that time because of the war years. If you didn't have that federal communications license, you couldn't operate that radio. The only way you get away with the man that didn't have a license, if he had somebody in the car with him that did have a license, then he could operate the radio, because by voice, they couldn't prove that it wasn't the licensed man that answered the call. But they would set us up. They would call and have us meet them at a certain location. And, of course, we answer the call, we'll be there. Well, if they caught the guy in the car without a license, because he's answering this call, naturally he answered it alone, then they would penalize him. So it was tough in that way. Another thing, which was really hard on us, we did not have heaters in the car. Well, cold days, what did we do? Put a kerosene lantern in the back seat, between the back seat and the front seat, just to get a little bit of whatever from the kerosene lantern. But you know what else we got? We smell like kerosene the rest of the day.
Oh, okay.
In our uniforms.
Okay.
That was part of that deal.
You're lucky that was the worst thing that happened to you with a heater in the car.
But then we finally got, like I say, we did eventually get into radios, and we got better cars, and again, you know, Lois, today, what disturbs me, we had a job to do then, and we did pretty good work. I had a lot of schooling, and I only graduated from high school as far as my high school education, but I did go to the federal FBI schools, I went to state police schools, I had certificates of, like when I was a detective, in fingerprinting, that I passed the course, and so we did have a lot of training in that way. But today, what bothers me is these people are trained so well, and luckily that they are. But our laws are kind of, I don't know how to say it. I hate to condemn certain people, certain whatever. Our officers are paid good money, but the laws are so now that that officer has to stand there and wonder, can I do this or can I not do this? Am I going to be sued? The man can't perform his job, and it's a shame. And I know by what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing and what I'm reading today, I could not be a police officer.
Jim quits teaching for that same reason.
Yeah.
But, you know, some lady that was in Oklahoma, that was when they had that bombing.
Mm-hmm.
teacher said that it was a dirty shame that all those laws are in. She says, I can't even put my arms around my little students and comfort them.
No.
Because I might get sued.
Yeah.
You know, and I know what you mean about the crazy laws we have.
Something should happen, something, I don't know what will happen, how they could get, but it's got to the point where, I don't know, I'd like to blame certain whatever, but I don't want to make the
politicians.
I hate to mention.
I know.
But it's not right.
It isn't.
And we've got good people, and they're well educated. Most of our police officers have some college education.
Yeah.
They're well.
Yeah.
But they almost have to have. They almost have to be an attorney to know if they can do this or not.
Right.
You know.
And that's a dirty, rotten shame, isn't it?
My way of doing it was years ago. I would do it, and then 10 minutes later, I find out, well, maybe I shouldn't have done it this way, but that's the way it was right then, and I did it that way.
And you did it because it had to be done
right. But again, I didn't have to worry, Lois, because I used to have people tell me, well, I'm going to sue you, or you're going to get sued, and I said, well, stand in line, because the line was big, you know, nothing happened. They come into courts, complain, and of course, our courts were very cooperative, too. The first thing the judge would say, no, not our police officer. They wouldn't do that. Because it's the way you had to do it.
Right, that's the way you had to do it.
Sure.
Bernie, when did you get married? I know you took time out for that, I remember.
Yeah, well, I got married in 1942. I was being drafted, and my wife, which was Margaret Hunsinger at that time, we were going together for a certain length of time, and she says, why don't we get married? I said, well, you know, I'm going into the service, and I don't know whether we want to do that or not. Plus, it was during Lent, which the Catholic people didn't believe in at that time, getting married during Lent. Well, anyway, we find out that if we got married on St. Patrick's Day, we could do it. It was the deal there was that it didn't take effect in the religion and didn't matter,
mm-hmm.
in particular because I was being drafted. Well, we had to report to the draft board if we're going to leave the state. Well, I made up my mind we were going to Niagara Falls for a honeymoon. So I went up to the draft board and I informed them that I was going to get married, and then I was going to leave the state regardless of whether they said yes or no. I said, I'm being drafted. I said, so what else could you do to me? And I said, whatever the consequences, I'll stand when I get back, but I'm just letting you know that I am going to Niagara Falls. Well, as it happened, there was a gal there that I knew in the office, and she said, you know, Bernie, I'm going to tell you something. We just got a deferment, you know, for you. Because I was working in a Dodge truck that time, and we were building Army equipment, and I was on supervision with the Dodge truck people, with the Chrysler people. And she says, you know, you're not being drafted, you're getting a deferment. She said, I want to tell you that so you have a good honeymoon, but she says, don't mention it because I'm not supposed to tell you this. You've got to get this from somebody else. Well, I did tell my Marge at that time, my wife, and that we're going to have a nice honeymoon, and we don't have to worry about the draft, and so that's what happened. Got married, went to Niagara Falls, and then we have a family, and the odd thing about it was we were married 6 years and no children. So I was making arrangements, which I had, like being on the police department, I had some connections. We're going to adopt. Well, we're going through a lot of paper. Nothing wrong, but no children. So anyhow, at a point where I was just about ready to finalize this adoption deal, Marge becomes pregnant.
Oh.
And anyway, Bernie, our son, who's the eldest son, was born. And what was kind of nice about it, it was after 6 years of marriage, but there was 4 or 5 granddaughters that my dad and mother already had, but no grandsons.
Oh, boy.
So Bernie became the first grandson, so that really made things kind of, you know, happy for them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what happened, my dad's name was Bernard, my name is Bernard, and there's no other way that we could do it but name Bernie, my oldest son Bernard, which goes by Bernie. So there was three Bernards at that time.
Good.
But what had happened after that, we're talking 6 years of marriage, my first child, then 6 more years within a month's time, that 1 month different, the second child was born.
Okay.
We don't know why those 6 years are involved. Then we had William, our second son. So Bernie married a girl by the name of Kathy Liggett, and they don't have any family. They're in the same thing now. They don't know why, but no children. But luckily, as it happened, Bill, our youngest son, is married, and they do have two daughters, which are my granddaughters, and one is going to be 12, one is going to be 9. So that's the extent of our immediate family. And Bill's wife's name is Linda. We've got a very nice family, very close family. And then, the only sad thing about it, my wife passed away in 1994, April of 1994, and after 52 years of marriage. So that was kind of naturally hard to take.
And I know by experience.
But I am so fortunate. I do have a real good family. Always did have. My daughter-in-laws, I consider them my daughters. They're that close to me.
Right.
And the little granddaughters, well, they take right after their mothers.
They're a little closer, aren't they?
They come in and do my housework. They think they do, but I let them go, you know. So the little granddaughters.
Right. Now, once upon a time, all your family, almost all your family, lived on DeQuinda. But
yes.
Now they've moved around and scattered here and there like everybody else is, right?
Yeah. I would say, yes, at that time, my three brothers and the one sister, the older sister, and myself, of course, and my folks, we all live on DeQuinda.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I have a brother who lives in California, and
is that Freddie or is that
That's Freddie. Yeah.
Okay.
Freddie. Yeah.
He's the youngest, isn't he?
Yes, he's the youngest. And then my brother Dick. Well, he lives in between Clarkson and Ortonville area. He moved out there. And my other brother, Latimer, he lives in Sterling Heights. So I am the only traveling car left in the city of Madison Heights.
I'll be darned.
And they can't drive me out because I'm stuck.
You're
here.
You're planted here.
I just don't know anything else, and I feel, you know, Lois, I want to be able to go down the street and somebody say, "Hi, Bernie," because I want somebody to recognize me. And I just feel that way. I don't want to be a stranger anywhere.
You know something? Everybody says to me, "Why don't you move?" I'll move when I have to, Bernie.
Yeah, when they move.
I just don't have to.
And you know what, Lois? Let me tell you something about that. I thought about that, too.
What's that?
I don't know how to say this, but after I pass away, I'm going to be in this town for 3 more days, I think. Because my funeral will be right here in the city of Madison Heights.
Yeah, over
at the Swanson.
That's where I'll be too. One of these days.
Okay. So I mean, even to that extent, I'm going to leave Madison Heights when they carry me out of here.
Yeah. Well, I know where I'll be buried at the White Chapel because that's where Bill is.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I know where I'll be, but
I'll be in Holy Sepulchre.
This is my home.
Yes.
I've been here for many, many years. I know you better than I know my relatives in the South.
Sure.
Really, I do.
That's right. I know.
And it's home. And I like people to know me.
It's just a natural thing, Lois, because, and it's not only that, you know, a lot of people live in this town for quite a few years, but nobody knows who they are, what they are, because they're not active, see? But you've been so active, it's a different story. And it's been your life, and it's like I'm talking about myself. I don't know. Maybe I should say I don't know anything else. You know?
You're still active. Tell me some of the boards you're on now.
Well, I'm still very active, yes. I'm on various boards in the city of Madison Heights right today. I'm on the Board of Review, which sometimes is good or bad.
I was on that once, too.
All right.
Straightening up.
I was offered that a long time ago, Lois, but I kind of hated to get on the Board of Review. In fact, the bank kind of frowned on me because I was on the Board of Directors. They said, you know, you're going to be on that Board of Review, and there's going to be some good customers come before you. They're good customers of the bank. How are you going to handle it? I said, I'm not going to go on the Board of Review. So I kept putting it off. Well, finally, I did accept the position. So I am on the Board of Review. I'm on a Municipal Building Authority. I'm on the EDC, which is the Economic Development Corporation. I'm also on the TIFA, which is the Tax Increment Finance Authority. And I'm also on the Compensation Commission. So I'm serving on those boards right now. And, like I said earlier, and I'm with the bank, yes, I don't want to take on any more because I don't feel I can handle it. And
right.
If I can't handle it properly, I will not accept it.
Right. I don't
take it just to say I'm on a certain... If I don't show up at a meeting, if I'm 10 minutes late, they say something is wrong because I'm that exact about being there and taking care of this.
I wonder if that runs with people that's older like that, because that's... I'm the same way. If I'm going to be late, I'd rather be absent.
But you did that when you were younger, too, though.
I know it.
So,
oh,
you know,
right.
that don't just happen now. That, like we talked earlier, some people just, I don't know why. You know they're going to be late.
Yeah.
Why is it? I can excuse people for certain times. Anybody can have a problem. But why is it that the same people just
going
to be late?
No, I don't know.
Well, I don't know, Lord. What else... If you got something else you would like to ask me?
I'm trying to think, it's been great talking to you. And I really appreciate your giving us this, and I know it'll be treasured for years. I know it will, but I'm going to make me a copy, if you don't mind, for my kids.
I hope you do.
And then
I would like to have a copy of that, too.
Okay, I'll tell Bill Miles.
If we are all through, I would like to say one thing, though.
Which? We're still on. You mean you want... Oh, you want to put it on a tape. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I know I'm getting a lot of credit for a lot of things here, but if I didn't have a lot of people helping me, supporting me, which they have, I would never be able to accomplish all the things that I have accomplished in the city. I had a lot of support from the city people, from my good friends, like Bill and Lois Myers and many, many other people, and I want to thank them all. And that's it for me, Lois.
Well, thank you, Bernie, and thank you for giving me this interview. A lot of people thought I couldn't get it. I did. I'm very proud of it, and I just wish you the best from now on, and God love you, okay?
Thank you very much, Lois.